Hi, it's Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation, the official podcast partner of the Boston Music Awards. 2017 sees the Boston Music Awards celebrate their 30th anniversary on December 7th at House of Blues in Boston. Tickets are open to the public and on sale now via the Boston Music Awards website at bostonmusicawards.com. The Boston Music Awards are celebrating over 180 nominees this year across multiple categories. Check out the full list via the BMA website. The night will feature multiple live performances from nominated artists. Winners will also be announced that night, so if you want to see who wins firsthand, make sure you grab tickets to the House of Blues. In 2001, 22-year-old Roberto Plano won first prize at the Cleveland International Piano Competition. 16 years later, he emigrated to Boston, Massachusetts with his family to continue his pursuit of music academia at Boston University. Mr. Plano has traveled the world and has won countless awards for his poetic musicianship and performances. We sat with Roberto at Boston University School of Fine Arts to discuss food, family, and his musical roots. The first piece you heard is off his new album called Inspiration, and you'll hear another later in the episode, as well as a classical piece by Franz Liszt. Check the episode notes for the titles. Okay, so here is our conversation with Roberto Plano, recorded at Boston University School of Fine Arts in Boston, Massachusetts. Thanks for all your help. You were so helpful.
You know what?
What?
The minute I start helping you.
The minute I start critiquing how you help.
You say I can't do it right and I can't wrap a chord correctly.
That's true, you don't.
Robert, but I do other things.
I have a pet peeve, all these chords, that they have to be wrapped up the right way.
Yeah.
Like he'll wrap it in like little teeny circles around the microphone or something so they're all kinked and everything.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy.
he calls it a pet peeve, like a, you know, it sort of annoys him.
I understand.
But it's really a psychiatric disease.
Okay. Yeah.
But Roberto Plano, thank you for sitting with us in this wonderful studio.
Thank you.
At Boston University College of Fine Arts. It's really great to have you here.
Well, he's having us here, actually.
Exactly. And the pleasure is mine.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you.
You're 0 for 2.
Yeah. We've been stalking Roberto Plano.
I know, we have.
And finally he let us in.
Yes, he did. We did sneak into the building, though.
On the wall there is the program for the wonderful Vivace Vilnius, which is a great annual get-together with world-renowned musicians that play in Lithuania and really interact with the Lithuanian musicians, and it's just a wonderful thing. And I had the privilege to go there last August with Lisa Wong, who's our other...
2016, right?
ATB alum.
Yeah. Right?
Yes, 2016. So we had dinner one night. We're sitting at a long table, and I think there was like one of the ambassadors of Lithuania were there, and
I think so.
Lisa, and then there was Mr. Roberto Plano.
And Ona.
Oh, and Ona, right, and Ona.
Ona Ionatite.
Ionatite, the flutist.
The flutist.
Here we are in
your
studio.
Yeah.
So you met him in last August 2016.
Yeah.
In Lithuania. So you must have just moved here.
It was funny, actually. I was in Lithuania because of so many events, one after the other one. First of all, I come to the United States since my first time here was in 2001. I came to participate in the Cleveland competition, and it was a great way for me to go to United States for free, because if you were selected, you could go and participate in the competition, and they would pay for everything, flight and meals and lodging, so it was great for me.
And you're a young guy at that time.
Very young, 22 years old. Great chance to come to the States for the first time. I came, and I won first prize. I was actually cheering for second prize. I was very, very much afraid. When I finally got into the finals, I couldn't believe it, and I was really hoping that I would get second, because first I knew that it would have changed my life so much, and I was scared of that.
Fear of failure, everybody has fear of failure, but fear of success, people don't, that's a scary thing, because once you get that little bit of success, that means you don't even know what that means.
Right.
Your whole life could change. You have to.
Yeah, and in fact, it actually happened. At the end, I'm very happy that I won first prize.
Sure.
At the end. But at that time, I didn't want. But it really changed my life. And so I started to come to the United States many times for concert tours.
Sure.
Like in the first 2 years, I had probably something like 70 concerts in 2 years. In 7-0. So I was constantly on tour. But at that time, I wanted to stay in Europe and live in Europe.
So Roberto, can we just dive back into that a second? So the life-changing moment, what was it like when you actually heard the news that you were the first prize winner?
Well, everybody was in Severance Hall, which is a great concert hall in Cleveland, where the Cleveland Orchestra plays. So the finals were in two different evenings. I played in the first evening, and then I enjoyed the second evening, and I felt that I did my job. So they started with announcing fourth prize, and then they announced third prize, and then it was only two of us left.
It's like
and
the American Idol of concert pianists.
Same thing. They were all incredible pianists. Second prize, actually, an incredible pianist that I loved. His name is Min So Soon. So I was really thinking that he would win.
Yeah.
Because he was my idol. I really love his playing. So, and then I don't know how they announced his name as second prize. I couldn't believe myself. I still had hairs at that time, so I put my hands on my hairs without believing it.
You knew they were about to say your name.
Yeah. So they even probably didn't say it, because everybody looked at me and they started cheering they clapped, and so I had to stand up. And I really didn't understand anything. And my English was, still now it's not great. But at that time, it was really, really, believe me, very terrible English. So I didn't understand what was going on. And the day after, I had to meet with the agent. So the competition had a manager. He's still my manager since then.
Huh.
So it's 16 years.
Yeah.
His name is Joel Altman, and he's from here, from Massachusetts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but he was managing the competition at that time. So I had a meeting with him and all the competition's people. I remember playing pool the whole night after the announcement.
Playing pool?
Yes.
Really?
In the dorm. Yeah, how all by myself.
Really?
Yeah. It was pretty scary, actually.
Are you a pretty good pool player?
Pretty good, yeah.
Well, he was there for like 9 hours, so he got really good.
Right.
We got to go to Jillian's after this.
Oh, yeah, I wish.
Throughout the next few weeks to months, was there a train that just started taking off?
That is what I wanted to do. So this was my dream come true.
Yeah.
Only I didn't expect it would come so soon. And actually, I didn't expect it would come. It was only a dream, not reality. Once it came, I had to dig myself so much into this thing. I wanted to do it as best as I could. And so
you had to dig deeper.
Yes, deeper, even deeper.
Even deeper than with the preparation that you did for the Cleveland.
Well, yeah, because at that time I probably had, I would say, between 4 and 5 piano concertos, which is nothing. I mean, it's very, very little repertoire. Right now, I have 38 concertos. And I had to do this because orchestras were asking me, would you play this piece? And even if I didn't have it in my repertoire, I would say, yes, of course, and I would learn it and play it.
So once you won, you stopped going to school?
No, I continued because I wanted my diplomas in Paris.
How much longer?
Well, I actually was skipping classes so many times. But my teachers were great and the school was great too.
Because of everything that was going on. So it did take you a while.
So because, of course, for the school, it was a great honor that one of their students could win a major competition like that.
Before that, you're a student.
Mm-hmm.
and now you're the winner of this prestigious award.
Like so, one day.
Right. So yeah. Now you go from student to professional musician.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Overnight, yeah.
With responsibilities and people expecting things from you and wanting you to go on tour.
Yeah.
And you have an agent now.
Yeah.
And now there's money coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
unbelievable.
I mean, it doesn't matter if you're 21 or 22, even if you're 50. Yeah. That's a lot to swallow.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's not like winning American Idol.
No, but...
our world is much smaller than that.
But it isn't, it isn't. I mean, it's based on technique.
Oh,
it's based on emotion. It's based on performance, stamina, your interpretation of the piece.
Yeah, I mean, everything.
But when you compare that to sort of, quote, rock stardom, you can have virtuosos, you could have amazing performers and singers, but there's a lot more that goes to that success than your pure, palpable talent.
Yeah, sure.
Well, if you look at your resume, if you look at your bio, and you see this with a lot of classical musicians, it seems very award-based.
Well,
you don't have that with a rock musician.
No, no.
But for classical instruments, that's
well,
what
it's
it
a
is.
And it's both, I think, a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah.
The good thing is that people like me that didn't come from a musical family, my parents didn't know anything about music.
Uh-huh.
So it was just completely random because I had a keyboard. When I was very young, my godfather gave me a keyboard and I started playing tunes there. I have perfect pitch. So I was lucky to have perfect pitch and finding tunes by myself without any knowledge of music. The competition-based world was great to me in order to enter in the world of classical music because I really didn't have any connections and anything. On the other hand, pure talent sometimes is very hard to recognize in competitions because, of course, music should not be a competition. Everybody has what they have to say. Of course, we have so many things in classical music, technique and knowledge of the repertoire and style and touch and so many things. But sometimes competitions are not the right way to judge. There should be space for everybody.
We were just talking, when we were talking to Alistair Mook last week, he was nominated for a Grammy.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, okay, first of all, the whole idea of award for music
is
ridiculous, right?
I agree.
But that said, he was really proud to get it.
Of course.
And he should be.
That's the same feeling
so
I had.
It is fantastic. But and especially when you're being judged by others based upon whatever strict numbers they have for whatever you get an 8 for emotion and
right,
a 9 for
right.
technique.
Yeah, it's really a lottery. Yeah. And I say it always to my students. I was lucky enough to have that. Sure.
Do you prepare to figure out how to get those high marks, like what you have to make sure you do and all that kind of stuff?
No, of course. My teacher at that time, yes, they were trying to help me in finding the right repertoire because you choose what to play.
Sure.
And that is luck as well.
What part of it is in your heart? What part is the art in the competition itself?
Well, for me, it was like the main thing. I don't think I was ever a really technical player. I decided to start the competition with a very slow piece. And usually in competitions, because you have very little time, you want to really impress the jury by letting them see how your hands are fast and everything. But I started in a different way. I wanted to see how I could go further by showing my artistry, if I had artistry, and I was really working on that. And at the end of first round, I remember there was a review, and they said that the competition had found its poet. And I was so, so incredibly happy about that comment.
I don't get chills that much on this podcast a few times, but you give me a little chill there.
They said about you they'd found their poet?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the first review.
If anything came out of this, wouldn't that have been your major, the sure. ultimate goal?
Sure.
Other than second place?
Of course. Yes, yeah. Yes.
I guess working backwards, so you've been here about a year, right?
Yeah, yeah. I was explaining that that Lithuanian festival that I went to was thanks actually to something related to Boston. Last year, I decided to apply for a job in the United States. I wanted to see how the experience of teaching in a university, in a U.S. university, would be. I always thought in conservatory systems in Italy. And I was a little bit tired of it because the recruitment of teachers there is very strange. It's state-based. So there's only a list of people that goes by seniority. There's no way to express your talents.
So wait, so explain...
So there's no search.
Explain conservatory teaching versus university teaching again.
Well...
What's
first
the
of all,
basic difference?
First of all, we don't have universities in Italy. Yeah. So we only have conservatory teaching.
Okay.
Here, I'm starting to get into this system in the United States, but it's pretty much the same thing. I mean, conservatory and universities can give you a degree. And then usually conservators are a little bit more into performing and universities are a little bit more into teaching in mm-hmm. terms of the degree you get. But in any case, in Italy, we only have conservatories.
Okay.
But in order to teach, in a conservatory, there are no searches. So you have to apply, and then once you apply and once you get in a list, you have to wait for your turn. So it's completely different in every other part in the world, I think. Because, for instance, Boston University, they launched a search, an international search, to get a new professor of piano. So when I heard about this, I wanted to try. This was like in September. In December, I received a call from the chair. He said, "You're one of the three finalists."
Back to three.
And you're like, "Oh, please let me be two. Please let me come in second."
Actually, I was not thinking anymore to this search. I thought it was over. So they actually flew me from Europe. And I did an interview. I spoke. I played. I gave a masterclass. And then they offered me the job.
So you've been here a year. I was Googling you. Uh-huh. And I found a video. It was all Italian.
Yeah.
But I was drawn to it. I don't know if you're living in your living room
probably,
or something.
Probably.
And you're speaking in Italian. Even the description is in Italian.
Yeah.
But I could tell.
It's because he is Italian.
Yes, that's true. But I could tell whatever you were saying, you were being very earnest. And for whatever reason, I think I saw an article also about you were explaining why you had left Italy.
That's right.
But I could tell in the video that it was an emotional decision
for
you.
Oh, it was very, very much.
And you could see, and I actually just watched the whole thing. I didn't understand a word you said, but.
Well, I'm glad that you found, that you felt that it was very emotional. And it was very emotional, actually. I felt very sad at that time as well. Of course, when I was there, people recognized my work, and I was lucky enough. I always say that I'm really a lucky guy. In the meantime, my wife and I had a music academy there, and it was very, very hard to run it because, like, if you're not really a political person, you have many difficulties in Italy, unfortunately. And we had an incredible group of students that came there from all over Italy, and they won international prizes, so it was great. But still, we were not recognized by the town. When I got the Boston thing, I moved, and like after a month, I received an invitation to get like the most prestigious prize of the town, of the city, Varese, where I come from, which is a big city. They were inviting me for the most prestigious prize of the city. Huh. 1 month after, I decided to come here.
So they realized, uh-oh, this guy's leaving.
Yeah, so or maybe because Boston University chose me, they thought that this was an incredible achievement, but it was very sad to see that it was only at that time, when I already closed the school, that this happened.
So it was what an honor, but a...
But at the same time...
Do you know what I mean by bittersweet?
Yeah, completely bittersweet. Yeah. I understand that.
So,
Plus all your students, the students that you probably...
Yeah, and students were crying. I mean, it was really a big thing for us.
How about your family? Like, tell us, so how old are your kids
same
now?
Thing.
It's like a Barbara Walters interview. We're gonna make everybody cry.
You started it.
How old were your kids when you moved?
9, 7, and 2.
Oh, three of them.
Yes, wow. Three of them, three girls. Can you imagine a whole family with an incredible number of bags in the airport moving?
No.
Completely moving.
That sounds like a nightmare.
It was like, and believe me, I really sold my car on the way to the airport.
We really?
Sold the car one on that the you way were driving?
The, yes. We drove from the house.
Did you have a piano in the tow?
No. The piano actually was shipped.
Yeah, good for BU. Thank you, guys.
Well, BU actually helped me so much with the moving. Yeah. But at that time, when we really moved, we had an agreement to sell the car we were driving on the way, and then we rented another car to go to the airport. That's the best deal we got.
Wow, so 3, 10.
Seven and 9, so now it's 8.
3, 8, and 10. Yeah. Are they integrating okay?
Yeah, this happened on August 27 last year. They were starting school on August 29 without any word of English. But my girls went into second and fifth grade with no words in English, any kind of.
That's
and now about 1 year.
Terrifying.
Yes. Yeah, so 1 year later.
For a little girl.
Yeah.
Are they completely fluent now?
They're really fluent. Especially, I would say, probably the second one because she was younger. So she picked it up even faster, maybe.
The seven years old. In the house, you speak Italian only?
Unfortunately, we speak Italian. I mean, unfortunately, I don't know, but we chose to speak Italian.
Yeah,
we don't want to forget.
No, language. I think that's the way to do it.
And the 3 years old.
They'll get their English.
Right.
So you might as well keep on speaking Italian in the two languages.
So the little one. It'll be interesting to
see what the little one does.
Well, the little one needed to learn Italian, so she did learn Italian.
Of course, yeah.
And she doesn't understand English yet, even if she watches cartoons, but she's going to preschool now, so I think
she will.
Yeah, the strange thing is that I was thinking that there would be maybe a bigger Italian community, but maybe it is in Boston. But if you move a little bit further west, we're the only Italians, actually.
And your wife's a musician.
She's Italian and she's a pianist as well.
And what is she doing?
Now does she teach?
She has her own studio.
Oh, good for
and
her.
She's a pianist.
Yeah, she's a pianist. I met her like the month before I came to Cleveland in 2001. So she was my lucky number.
Yeah. And what's her name?
Paola.
So you met Paola right before you came to Cleveland, and she experienced that thing with you.
Yeah.
But speaking of Italians in Boston, you have been to the North End.
I've been. You want to know if it's really authentic or not?
Yeah, tell me about the food. Or what do you think is a good authentic restaurant in Boston?
Italy. E-A-T.
I haven't been there yet.
At Prudential.
That's authentic.
Yes, that's the real thing.
That's brand new.
Yeah, it's brand new.
Yeah, and
it's
there's a real one thing. In New York, too.
Yes, there are two in New York.
This is a big thing. All right.
That's the real authentic thing because you really find only products that were made in Italy.
The food. Yeah. The stuff is actually imported over from Italy.
Yes.
And you can taste that.
Yes, and I think the cooks, they get trained by Italian cooks. We have Italy in Italy as well.
Really?
Yes.
You have Italy in Italy?
In Italy. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Chuck, can you say that?
Forget my spelling.
I can't.
Can you say it in
so that backwards?
People can understand? I can say it. I'm not going to
say it
for you.
You have Italy in Italy. I didn't know that.
Let's bring it back to music. You're a pianist. You're a classical pianist, right? Now, was classical always your...
No, actually. I started playing everything when I was 3.
So what did you listen to in the house?
Everything. Well, my girls, of course, now they're crazy for Ariana Grande and everything. So
okay,
I'm forced to listen to some of that. And actually, there are some very good things.
Sure.
In every kind of music.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I used to play pop, and Elton John was my idol when I was a teenager.
Oh, I gotta hear it, Roberto.
And Phil Collins. I can play everything.
God.
I mean,
oh, please.
I can play everything.
Did you guys talk about this before?
No, actually.
He's like the biggest Collins fan.
Oh,
so,
really? Roberto.
Well, no, I should play something.
No, we'll get something on. Yeah. Play right now. Play something. I'll hold the microphone.
Oh,
play me a Phil Collins song. This is it. Thank you guys for coming out tonight.
Don't sing. God.
Let's do it in Italian.
No, I can't.
Who can Google Translate?
In Italian, it would be so romantic.
There we go. That is like 1984. Or no, 86, I think. There's just an empty space. Did not talk before.
No, I'm just.
Take a look at Chuck me now. Chuck, take a look at me now.
I'm looking at you.
I love every kind of music.
Well played,
thank
poorly,
you
poorly
so
sung.
I've been a big Genesis and Phil Collins fan my whole life.
Wow.
Since I was 10. And
he's got a restraining order against him, Phil Collins does.
But on that note, what other artists come to mind that you grew up with?
Well,
you mentioned Elton John and Phil Collins.
This song,
the English
song.
Guys. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really love the tunes, of course, and people that could play the piano, like Elton John, and there were so many people. Like, my brother was incredible. He was a fan of Garth Brooks. Garth Brooks? Yes, Garth Brooks, yeah. Country guy. So yeah. I knew his songs as well. Richard Marx.
Oh,
you remember
yeah.
Richard Marx?
Yeah,
he had
the big hit in 85. Here. Yeah.
You're bringing me
it's
back
got a
to
very
my
nice classical feel to
late
it.
Late teenage youth.
Actually, once I was playing with an orchestra, I think in Arkansas, and conductor Stephen Baez, he is like the conductor that always conducts the orchestra for Richard Marx now. And so we were speaking about something, and funny. Richard Marx came to our mind. So I played this, and he sent it to Richard, and Richard sent me an email
really?
A few
awesome.
Weeks after, saying, "Wow, I love it!"
Wow.
So this was another dream come true for me.
God.
So did you have bands back as a kid?
I had a band. Yeah.
Yeah, and you so
well.
Did you sing?
Well, I was singing, but my brother especially was singing.
You were in the band with your brother.
I was playing the keyboard, and we were doing all kinds of rock and blues brothers as well.
So you're doing covers?
Yes, covers.
Ah, yeah. Sweet.
I did not think I'd be in this room today.
Listening to Phil Collins.
Mr. Well, I knew that because we always bring him up somehow. The Blues Brothers.
The Royal We. Yeah. What was the name of your band? Do you remember?
Yes, Wings of Angels.
Wings of Angels.
Oh, wow.
Excellent.
Great. We got to get them on the podcast next.
I love it.
We
love
need
it.
A Wings of Angels reunion tour.
What was the name of your first big band? Like the one that you can remember as a kid that was, well. You
the know, Underground.
The Underground was your big one.
As in the Tube.
Yeah. Not Chuck?
No, Chuck was my band when I was 20 years old in college. I had a band called Chuck.
Nice.
Yeah, I
That's
like that
connection.
Too. I like it. Yeah. And I had a band in college called Equinox.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a lovely spa in Vermont, too.
Is it?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I had a band in high school called Tequila and the Worms.
That's great. Yeah, I like every kind of music. And right now I have a duo with a jazz pianist. We like to combine Latin, jazz,
a
world
duo.
Music. Yeah,
live?
We have to. Live? Yeah,
where
we
do you do this?
Yeah, where do you
well,
play?
Well, and we would like to come to the United States as well, but we had a few.
Well, you're here now. He's over there now?
Well, he's in Italy.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
so what do you guys meet in France?
He's an Italian jazz pianist.
Meet
no.
halfway?
When I go back to Italy, we rehearse. But
and
our
tell
first,
me about that.
Our
so what do you do with the jazz
well,
combo?
The first CD is coming out in like probably a week or so.
Oh, so you've written some stuff.
Well, we arranged.
He doesn't just jam with a guy.
We
I just found out about the album 2 seconds ago.
We actually jam. There's one song which is completely jammed. One of us starts, and then the other one continues, and
okay,
we go on for like 10 minutes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm fascinated with improvisational classical.
Yeah, well...
Do you do that?
Yes, but even if nobody taught me, but it's something that I love.
Classical improvisation to me is... I learned from Lisa Wong that 2 centuries ago...
Yeah. That's what they
that's
were doing.
That's how classical music was played. It was improvisational.
We lost it. Some of us do it in concert stage. I didn't have the courage yet to do it by myself. But
could
I had
you
the courage.
Do it? Do you have the courage to do it right now with just the three of us?
Sure.
Let's hear something. Just play something in F minor.
Thank you.
See, that's beautiful.
Well, it's not really classical. Of course, there's so much melange.
True, but it's classical to me and Chuck.
But that, I mean, how I mean,
a classical composer would probably not like it.
Oh, that's so fascinating. It really is, because
I mean, it's something that I really like to do, especially with this guy, because he's really a jazz pianist. We did everything, like starting from Bach. Like, I play a prelude and he improvises on the prelude.
Exactly. You're playing an actual Bach piece.
The Bach piece, and he is improvising on the
So
Bach
it's almost
piece.
Like you're playing the head of the jazz standard.
Exactly.
And then someone's soloing over that kind of
thing. Right, right. Yeah. And then we chose Spanish music. We did Egberto Gismonti. He is South American. Uh-huh. We did Piazzolla, of course. We found an incredible philosopher, composer. His name is Gurdjieff. He was from Armenia, and he wrote some incredible tunes in like Middle Eastern literally we go in every part of the world with the music, I mean, by choosing music that is very different, and we combine my classical knowledge and his jazz knowledge, and I love it.
Are you fully classical trained?
That was it. So I
as jazz is concerned, like, maybe, where does that come into you?
Maybe pitch helps a lot.
Yeah.
So the fact that I have perfect pitch helps to wander around on the keyboard without losing yourself.
Yeah, let's wander a little now. So I remember, we'll bring it back to that table where we're having dinner in Lithuania, in Vilnius. We talked about perfect pitch because, of course, it's a bunch of scientists too, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember we used that little device? And it was like... And you could tell us...
That was beautiful, by the way.
Yeah, it sounded like some, I don't know, sci-fi movie. Thank you very much, everyone.
Was that improvised?
Yes.
It was really good.
So if I were to get on the piano here...
It's an F sharp, D, C, D, G sharp. A sharp.
You know why I'm laughing? You don't know why. Chuck always calls that an A sharp.
Oh, really?
But it's really a B flat.
It's B flat.
Yeah.
Screw you.
Now, I'm going to play them all at the same time.
Oh, that's too hard.
Play a C flat.
That's too hard.
Wow.
There's
an A. Well, you screwed up. Play it
Chuck, play come nice on.
And,
come on.
Play it nice and clean. You hit like three.
There was a G, there was an F. There's a C as well.
There was a G, there was an F, and there's a C as well. Ready? One more.
Oh, no. There's an E flat, there's a D, there's a B flat.
I almost fell over the piano.
That's
If a podcast could visualize, I'm about to faint.
Can you get your butt out of his face, though? How about that? When did you learn? That's amazing. When did you learn you had...
My ass was just in Roberto Pires' face.
It was. Okay. I'm sure I appreciate it.
I'm sorry about that.
When did you realize you had perfect pitch? And did you realize it was even a thing?
I was studying in a very small music school at that time in my hometown. And I remember being like on stage and my teacher was showing this to a bunch of kids. And they were listening to me.
How old?
Probably 6, 7.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. It felt like a very unusual thing. But to me, it's just the way... enter in my body.
Yeah, it's like, what color is that? That's blue, that's red, that's orange.
And you know what? I'm colorblind.
Oh,
you would not believe in this, but I'm colorblind.
Interesting.
You know, there is an area in the brain you may have heard of called the...
You making this up? Just make it up.
No.
Improvisation.
Sorry. The planum temporale in your temporal lobe. It's right in the back of your temporal lobe that receives the sound that goes into the temporal lobe, and it's near Wernicke's area, which is like a little area of processing speech and music.
Yeah.
That has been associated with those people with perfect pitch or absolute pitch. Oliver Sacks, he's talked about that a little bit, and it lights up on functional MRI and all this stuff. So that area in Roberto's brain is clearly highly developed or...
I never wanted to really explore that thing because it's scary for me.
Sorry,
to
Roberto.
No. To me, it's such a natural thing. Like if I look and try to understand, I'm afraid I'm going to lose it.
You know, they also have sunglasses that can make you see colors.
Roberto.
But in your case, I wouldn't get them because you might lose your perfect pitch.
You still know. Ready?
Maybe F sharp.
Oh, that's an easy one.
Yes. G, A flat, B.
Chuck, what is this note?
That is a F flat.
You know, it's unbelievable because I always thought, what about people that don't know music? Maybe they have perfect pitch, but they don't know.
Yeah, why would they? Yeah, how would they know?
How would they know? Yeah. They don't know notes. Yeah. They don't know the name of the notes.
I mean, you're talking about millions of people who don't know music.
Right. So maybe millions of people have.
Maybe I have perfect pitch, Ron.
That's true, actually. Yeah. 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 Maybe you do.
I'm going to tell people I do. I mean, they can't prove me wrong.
If I would not be. I have perfect pitch.
I have perfect pitch. I can't read music. Yeah. But
if I wouldn't be a musician, how would I know?
So if you weren't a musician, was your life going to go a different way? What do you think?
If I would not be a pianist, I would be a conductor. That's for sure, because that was really my dream.
But what about...
But if I would not be a musician, I liked philosophy so much when I was in high school. So something related to...
Well, you're a teacher, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
Then maybe that was your
direction. My parents were a teacher, elementary and preschool.
You've come out with 22 albums or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Okay. But you're coming out with a jazz album now.
Yeah. Well, it's not really jazz, but it's something in between.
Leaning in that direction. Yeah. Something certainly different from what you've done before.
Oh, yeah.
Why classical? Why did you end up being a classical guy rather than maybe someone who does everything? I mean, you do everything. But
sure. First of all, I was trained as a classical.
Yeah.
And when I was a teenager, I chose to continue to be a classical guy because I loved classical music.
Well, you must have had encouragement from teachers,
from
that
teachers.
Pushed you to another level? Or?
Probably, yes, yes. But that's what I wanted to do. I mean, I was completely in love with... And I still am, but I was completely in love with Liszt music, Franz Liszt. And he was the real romantic guy. And my last classical album is on Franz Liszt.
Right here. It's beautiful.
It's a very strange album, actually, because Decca, the recording label, which is an incredibly prestigious one, and I was so fortunate to get into their roster a couple of years ago. For me, I mean, when I was a teenager, I was dreaming to be there. And there you go.
So do they approach you asking you to do a piece, or do you go to them saying, I really wanted to do this?
The approach with them came both ways. So I was looking for a label that would be interested in record this particular repertoire, and it's very, very unusual. And then we found out that the international label didn't record this since 50 years. So we decided, let's go and let's try.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Wow.
But it was incredible with that particular repertoire because Franz Liszt is a virtuoso. And so he wrote some of the most virtuoso stuff ever written for piano. And he's mostly well known. For instance, maybe you remember Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Oh, of course.
I know Franz Liszt. We hung out together.
So it was his...
But no, I have a couple of his actual records.
Yeah, so. I guess.
Really?
So
yeah, I do. Heard of him?
He's really
well. No, I mean, I've heard of Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry were
the themes.
Playing on the... I mean, the cartoon was on a Hungarian Rhapsody by Franz Liszt.
Oh. You recognize them if you heard it.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
exactly.
That's Looney Tunes.
Yes, that's Looney Tunes.
It's got to be in like several different Looney Tunes.
So people maybe know Liszt for this, but I recorded a very, very... boring, but it's not boring for me. It's incredible music, very spiritual, called Harmonie Poétique et Religieuse, which means religious and poetic harmonies.
That's so beautiful.
And they go all over, they go over for so much, for like more than 2 hours, and in a very unusual way for that.
You chose him because you grew up sort of listening to that music.
Because I wanted to be a little bit different and again go into the poetic side of music.
Have you ever just gone to a studio around Boston and then just said, you know, I want to do Beethoven's something and then just go and record it?
No, I didn't, because now I have this contract with Decca, so I'm going back to Italy actually to record my next CD.
You're traveling a lot, obviously. I'm sure it goes in waves. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of that travel and you as a person on that airplane approaching these cities. Are there rituals? Are there things that you do to prepare?
When I started this job, this career and this life, actually, because it's not a career or a job, but it's your whole life that travels. I was so excited to go into airplanes. I didn't have so many possibilities as a young kid. After a year, I was hating it. Hmm. And I remember Lord of the Rings saved my life. I was reading so much on the planes because I could not stand flying anymore. It was so tiring. It was very, very stressful for me.
Jet lag, obviously.
Jet lag all the time. You know, when you travel for classical music, you don't really have so much time to really feel the experience of the place.
You must have to really take care of yourself too, and your energy. And
I try. Well, my girls, they help me. My daughters and my wife.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Do you get to see any music in Boston? Do you get to go to the clubs? Or?
Well, yeah, actually, with the girls, it's not easy. And also, we don't live in the city, right. So it's not really easy. And the first year, we said, let's try to get adjusted.
Yeah.
But I would love to do it.
The Paradise is right down the street. Do you know the Paradise?
No.
It's a rock club. Maybe Phil Collins will play there one day.
Yeah. You two played there in the 70s.
Does he still sing?
Who's Phil?
Yeah.
He's got a terrible back and stenosis in his neck, so he can't play the drums anymore.
Oh, no.
But he does sing, and he's on tour this year. You notice the title of his tour is Not Dead Yet.
No way.
That's very optimistic.
We would love to hear you play now, but we look forward to hearing you play locally.
How often do you perform?
Well, it depends. At least 4 or 5 concerts a month. Next week, I have a concert in Madison. I forgot
where
already.
Do you have?
In Madison, Wisconsin, with my wife.
Oh.
And actually, my daughters, well, that should be a surprise. I should not say it.
Okay.
But they will play the anchor with us.
We'll make
really?
Eight hands.
You're doing keyboard? Eight hands,
yes,
plano?
On one keyboard, plano family.
You're getting eight plano hands.
Yeah, there's a video on YouTube, plano anchor. You will find that. Plano family anchor.
Plano family anchor is eight hands.
Eight hands.
Which eight times five is what, Chuck?
I don't know.
40 fingers.
Fingers, yeah.
What's the name of the jazz album that's coming out next week?
It's called Inspiration. Plano Pagliaga, yeah. Paolo Pagliaga is the jazz
guy. Were you able to get it and hear it?
Sure. Yes, absolutely.
Love to hear that.
Yeah.
Roberto Plano, Inspirations, done.
And I'm sorry, who's the other gentleman?
Paolo Pagliaga.
We can't wait to meet him someday in Paris. Yes. We'll all meet.
Right.
This was fascinating.
This is great, and we got to get this poor guy home.
So the first one would be a piece by Piazzolla. Piazzolla, Astor Piazzolla, was an Argentinian composer, and he mainly wrote tangos. But of course, he was classically trained. And one of his teachers was Ginastera, Alberto Ginastera, and he was one of the most influential South American composers. So I would love to play a milonga by him that shows this classical and popular side at the same time. Thank you.
you.
Very, very beautiful.
Hey, Ron, nice job.
I was on the percussion. And it was...
We'll just make it part of the song, man. It's improvisation.
Exactly.
Wow, Roberto, that was beautiful.
Thank you.
Let's do another.
Yeah.
And you know what? And I'm gonna ask you to indulge me too. I saw a video of you like, your hands are just you're doing something really fast and cool and stuff. Can you do something like that?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I could try to play this piece that I transcribed from the guitar. It's
called
Recuerdos de Alhambra by Francisco Tárrega, a Spanish composer. And I love so much the tune that I wanted to see if it works on the keyboard.
Aha.
Thank you.
you.
That's great. Thank you. I just want you to know, after doing all my full evaluation, you've come in second place.
Find out more about Roberto at robertoplano.com and check out a few live videos we took of Roberto playing at abovethebasement.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Ronnie and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique.